Conditions apply.
If we look to the answer as to why for so many years we achieved so much, prospered as no other people on earth, it was because here in this land, we unleashed the energy and individual genius of man to a greater extent than has ever been done before. Those who say that we're in a time when there are no heroes, they just don't know where to look. The sloping hills of Arlington National Cemetery, with its row upon row of simple white markers bearing crosses or stars of David, they add up to only a tiny fraction of the price that has been paid for our freedom. As for the enemies of freedom, those who are potential adversaries, they will be reminded that peace is the highest aspiration of the American people. We will negotiate for it, sacrifice for it. We will not surrender for it now or ever. We are Americans.
Welcome to Always Right Radio with Bob France on AM 1420. The Answer.
It is indeed a free-for-all Friday, and I am echoing all over the place here. Push that button for me, if you would. Thank you very much, Sausage Boy. 7 minutes after the hour of 9 o'clock and underway, it's the 26th morning of the fourth month, year of our Lord, 2024. Yeah, you heard me right. It's a free-for-all Friday! All right, that puts me in the mood. We are in a good place today, mentally, anyway, because we have a lot of work to do, and I am focused on it. I find myself feeling better about things the more locked in I am, and I'm very, very locked in today. I better be, by the way, because I've got 6 hours of radio. After the 3 hours we have together this morning-ish, I'm going to be hosting for Officer Tatum tonight from 6 to 9 p.m., so if you're looking for some evening time into the night, conservative talk, I'm going to be sitting in for Officer Tatum, and I'm looking forward to that. It's been a while since I've done that slot. I used to do that slot all of the time in place of the great Larry Elder, the great Eldersky, and now Brandon Tatum is doing a phenomenal job in that slot. I'm a fan. I'm a big fan of Brandon Tatum's. So I'm really, really happy about sitting in for him tonight. So make sure that you are tuned in not only this morning but tonight as well, if you can, if you have the opportunity to, for at least a little while. Coming up on the program this morning, we are going to be talking with Jack Windsor in about a half an hour. Jack Windsor from the Ohio Press Network and from Salem, Columbus. He will be joining us at 10:10. We're going to be talking Kenneth Abramowitz. I'll save that story until we get to it. And, of course, we're taking your phone calls on a free-for-all, 216-901-0945, 888-281-1110. That's the way to get into the program. And before we get into the top 9 at 9, what we need to do is pledge allegiance to our flag, the one that represents this glorious country, which means if you do not support this glorious country, don't fake it with a virtue signal toward the flag. Instead of standing proudly and facing your flag, how about you just take a knee like the good little Marxist we know that you are? For the rest of us, however,
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America. And to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
I'm getting really good feedback since we started doing the top 9 at 9 a few weeks back. A lot of people, when they see me, saying I really like the top 9 at 9, and that's good. I appreciate it. That's unprompted, unrequested. I'm not taking surveys, but people have said so. However, I will do a little bit of a survey now. If you like what you are hearing in the top 9 at 9, let me know, because I'm considering. It takes a lot more work to put together audio clips and to put together my copy, the things that I want to say and I want to talk about. But sometimes I feel like not doing a top 9 at 9 because I've got an issue, a story, something that is huge that I want to opine about and do some in-depth, deep-dive work on. So let me know if you want me to keep doing top 9 at 9 or if you just want to hear me get into my thing, if you will, the way we had done it beforehand. So I'm looking for, in other words, what I want to do is give you what you want. I consider myself to be a man of the people. I give the people what they want. So tell me whether or not you like the top nine at nine. I do. I feel like it gives a good basis for all of the things that are going on so that we can all have an opportunity to talk about them. But like I said, I will indeed give serious consideration to the will of the people. Having said all of that,
it's 9 o'clock. Do you know where your headlines are? We do. It's time for the top nine at nine on Always Right Radio.
All right, you know, you see what's going on across this country right now. It is a very, very dangerous time. It is getting worse by the day. Let's start in New York. The New York City Police Department officials, have slammed Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez, you know, the bubble-headed bartender, yesterday for demonizing law enforcement's response to the anti-Semitic protests on Columbia University's campus. ADC, often known as Alexandria Damasio-Cortez, at least on this show, responded to a video posted on X that showed NYPD counterterrorism officers on campus who were there to protect Jewish students and ensure that the far-left lunatics did not become violent. She tweeted, quote, "Not only did Columbia make the horrific decision to mobilize NYPD on their own students, but the units called in have some of the most violent reputations on the force," end quote. And I want to interrupt that and respond to that and say, hey, a bubblehead. They're not all the students of Columbia. There are paid agitators. How do you know? Look at the tents. This is a coordinated effort, not an organic thing where every student goes into, because you know what? Every student in Columbia doesn't have a pup tent sitting in their dorm room, waiting to go outside and establish a, you know, an autonomous zone, if you will. No. NYPD Chief of Patrol responded to ADC by saying, "Truly amazing. Columbia decided to hold its students accountable to the laws of the school. They are seeing the consequences of their actions, something these kids most likely never thought of and were never taught. Good SAT scores and self-entitlement do not supersede the law. I'm sure you would agree that we have to teach them these valuable life skills." That is outstanding. Republican Representative Steve Scalise says these universities are responsible for all of this because they're the ones radicalizing the students.
Disgusted by what they're seeing on these campuses. And it started, by the way, they brew their own hatred. A lot of these professors are teaching the hatred in the classroom. They don't make their Jewish students feel safe. I mean, we saw it. We had hearings on Capitol Hill where we brought Jewish students in who said they flat out are being targeted, harassed in the school, in the classroom, and the schools aren't protecting them. A lot of these Ivy League schools that charge $60,000, $80,000, $100,000 a year. You know, you wonder why some of these students get tagged with all the student loan debt because they're not even allowed to get an education. They get saddled with the student loans and then they can't get a good job. I mean, the school should be on the hook for some of that.
The school should be on the hook for the radicalization. Most importantly, Steve Scalise is perfectly correct.
Number two.
All right. Meanwhile, Brown University students, they've begun an encampment now. They started it on Wednesday with a student group warning other students that the university is threatening to crack down on protesters. Students participating in that encampment, quote, have been informed they will face conduct proceedings, Brown said in a statement. Meanwhile, at Northwestern University in Illinois, they've begun setting up an encampment on campus grounds. This one started yesterday, joining the growing list across the country demanding schools divest from Israel and companies that support its campaign on Gaza. Northwestern's little lunatics prompted a response from the university saying a tent encampment is prohibited under university policies and campus police are at the encampment working to have the tents removed. America-hating, Somali-loving, terrorist-sympathizing Representative Jihad Omar from Minnesota says history is on the side of the terrorist-sympathizing protesters.
They don't want their tax dollars to be complacent. And for the member who said, you know, like, don't waste your parents' money, they don't want their parents' money to go in supporting a genocide that they oppose. And so I do believe that history is going to be on their side. And these members who think this is a political opportunity to turn the world against these people who are standing for a morally just right cause are going to be looked at and mocked in history.
I don't know if we still run people out of town on rails anymore, but if we did, I would drag her to the rail yard.
Number three.
Pro-Palestinian protesters in Texas, who have already been arrested, are now free. They were released without charges after another Soros-backed district attorney's office decided to let them walk. At least 34 were arrested Wednesday during protests at the University of Texas Austin campus, which organizers called Popular University for Gaza. Legal concerns were raised by defense counsel. We individually, this is the DA's office, we individually reviewed each case that was presented and agreed there were deficiencies in the probable cause affidavits. The court affirmed and ordered the release of these individuals. We will continue to individually review all cases presented to our office to determine whether prosecution is factually and legally appropriate. This from the Travis County Attorney's Office. Who is the Travis County District Attorney? His name is Jose Garza. He is a member of the Democratic Socialists of America. I didn't stutter. That's who he is.
Number four.
The Supreme Court, hearing a last-ditch appeal from President Trump, appeared yesterday to be granting some level of immunity to protect former presidents from being prosecuted for alleged crimes committed while in office. Over nearly 3 hours of oral argument, the court's conservative majority expressed greater concern that a future president might flinch from bold action for fear of prosecution after they leave office. That more so than the possibility that Trump could avoid accountability on charges that he attempted to steal the 2020 presidential election from Joe Biden. The risk, said Justice Brett Kavanaugh, was that a Trump trial could open the door to a new era of American politics where prosecution of ex-presidents became routine, such as the use of special counsels accelerated after the Watergate scandal. Law professor Jonathan Turley said that yesterday was a good day at the Supreme Court for President Trump.
Well, if this trajectory continues from oral argument, it was a good day for Donald Trump because there were five justices that clearly were not buying into the D.C. Circuit's approach. Now, that doesn't mean that they're going to say that Trump is immune from prosecution. But at a minimum, if that is the case, they would likely have to remand it to the district court to say, we need you to develop this record a little further. If they do that, it's hard to see how this could possibly be tried before the election.
Jonathan Turley, of course, as you know, is a noted left-wing law professor, but he is becoming more and more red-pilled, it would appear, by the day. And not because he is becoming partisan, but because he is actually following the Constitution, as all good law professors are supposed to do.
Number five.
The latest snapshot of the economy, which you already have a snapshot every time you go to the grocery store and every time you go to the gas station, but the latest official snapshot rattled stock and bond markets yesterday with two bits of disappointing data: slower economic growth and still strong inflation. Gross domestic product expanded at a 1.6% seasonally and inflation-adjusted annual rate in the first quarter. The Commerce Department said yesterday a pullback from last year's quick pace. So the slowing economy lagged behind the 2.4% projected by economists at the Wall Street Journal. Meanwhile, yesterday's report also pointed out that inflation, using the Fed's preferred gauge, was likely firmer than expected in March. That gives investors another reason to give up on the idea that the Federal Reserve could begin cutting interest rates in the coming months. What that means is if you've been waiting for the rates to drop so that you could buy a home, sorry, you're still going to face 7, 8, maybe 9% mortgage rates. If you want to try to buy a home in Joe Biden's America, good freaking luck.
Number six.
In a sweeping new Title IX rule, the Biden administration has usurped Congress to undermine free speech, dissolve due process, and redefine sex to include gender identity. The rule, effective August 1st, forces all educational entities in receipt of federal funds to allow males access to female spaces, as well as their sports and their scholarships, as long as they have a psychological disorder and claim that they are females. Albert Mohler made this clear. You cannot have equity for girls and women, which is supposed to be the goal, and support a transgender agenda. You simply cannot do both at the same time. Effectively, the Biden administration has just made a huge declaration Women and girls, sorry, you can kiss your opportunities along with your Title IX. Goodbye.
Number seven.
Former House Speaker Nancy Pelosi has condemned Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu's approach to the war in Gaza and says he should resign because he's an obstacle to peace. Pelosi said in an interview on with an Irish journalist or outlet, said that the October 7th attacks by Hamas, which killed over 1,200 people and saw 253 people being kidnapped, were acts of cruel brutality. And she said that we recognize Israel's right to protect itself, but we reject the policy of Netanyahu. Terrible. What could be worse than what he has done in response, she said. Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu says the anti-Semitic attitude coming from certain American leaders and all over American college campuses look an awful lot like the German universities from the 1930s.
What's happening on America's college campuses is horrific. Anti-Semitic mobs have taken over leading universities. They call for the annihilation of Israel. They attack Jewish students. They attack Jewish faculty. This is reminiscent of what happened in German universities in the 1930s. It's unconscionable. It has to be stopped. It has to be condemned and condemned unequivocally. But that's not what happened. The response of several university presidents was shameful. Now, fortunately, state, local, federal officials, many of them have responded differently, but there has to be more. More has to be done. It has to be done not only because they attack Israel. That's bad enough. Not only because they want to kill Jews wherever they are. That's bad enough. It's also, when you listen to them, it's also because they say not only death to Israel, death to the Jews, but death to America.
The prime minister cares more about America, and he's not even an American, than Ilhan Omar, than Sharia Tlaib, than any member of the Hamas squad. Thank you, PM Benjamin Netanyahu. Those of us who actually care about Israel and America are with you.
Number eight.
Nearly two-thirds of Americans believe illegal immigration is a real crisis, not a media narrative, according to the most recent polling that Axios survey released yesterday, conducted by the Harris Poll. Found that 51% of Americans would support mass deportations of illegals. And that includes 42% of Democrats. That's a pretty strong number, by the way. 46% of independents, 68% of Republicans. Illegal immigration remains the top issue for voters in the upcoming election. Amid a record high number of border crossings since Biden took office, the Biden administration ranks higher than any other factor than who is to blame for the crisis. The survey found 32% believe that Biden is most responsible. I would follow that up with a comment saying that 68% of the people ought to have their freaking heads examined. Biden has repeatedly criticized the immigration system as broken and continues to be critical of Republicans who blocked a bipartisan border bill earlier this year, saying it was done for political reasons to assuage former President Trump. But then again, in other news, Joe Biden is a blithering idiot.
Number nine.
Speaking of the idiot, Joe Biden's latest proposal to raise capital gains taxes, to raise them to the highest level they have been in more than a century, is facing heavy criticism from experts who warn that such an action could significantly harm the U.S. economy. According to a report by the Treasury Department, Biden's proposed fiscal year 2025 budget would increase the top marginal rate on long-term capital gains and qualified dividends to a staggering, are you ready for this number? 44.6%. A capital gains tax hike of that magnitude would take the rate to the highest level since it was first introduced in the early 1920s. In a recent post, Americans for Tax Reform said the tax proposal outlined, when paired with high state taxes, could lead to many Americans paying rates totally of more than 50% of their income. Did you hear that? More than 50% of your money would go to the government if this idiot stays in office and his plans come to fruition. They also noted that the proposal would crush small business owners who would be exposed to high tax rates when they seek to sell their businesses, as those would be subject to a 44.6% tax. Investor Kevin O'Leary says the more Biden taxes, the more growth, the less growth there will be.
This narrative's gone on forever. It's ageless. Let's get everybody to pay their fair share. The determination of what the fair share is changes from administration to administration. But the core issue, and I think the way to look at it, is America is the most successful economy on earth. Two-thirds of the jobs are created by entrepreneurs that start companies. You don't want to tax them to oblivion. You want to have a fair share that's progressive for everybody. So the more you make, more tax you pay, that's fair. But you also have to look at where you are in world competition, where you sit in the G20. You want to be right in the middle. The minute you really start raising taxes and they become uncompetitive, either at the state level, you see everybody leaving New York and going to Florida or to Texas or to lower jurisdictions where taxes are, same thing happens with countries. So you got to be very careful. Biden's proposals, and look, I admire what he wants to do, but the more he taxes, the less growth there'll be in that.
And that's the most important line. The less economic growth, the less business opportunities, the less job opportunities we will have. There you have it.
This has been the Top 9 at 9 on Always Right Radio. AM 1420. The answer.
All right, 9:27. You can chew on the Top 9 at 9 for a few minutes and maybe for about a half an hour.
Elbridge, Texas,
okay,
home.
You be quiet now. You can chew on that for a few minutes because we're going to be talking with Jack Windsor on the flip side of the bottom of the hour break. Going to talk to him about a few Ohio issues, ask his thoughts on where things are with respect to the campus craziness, and we'll take your phone calls after that. 216-901-0945, 888-281-1110. Always Right Radio.
The answer.
All right, 9:35. Thanks for joining us on AM 1420. The answer. I want to dive right back into the craziness that is going on college campuses that is very quickly, of course, going to grow. It is the weekend now. It is going to grow and expand into American cities, inner cities, probably to bridges, probably to heavily trafficked areas in an attempt to continue to sow chaos. It started at Columbia and Yale on the East Coast. It is now happening at USC and Berkeley on the West Coast. It's happening across the Heartland, Northwestern in Illinois. One of the latest, dozens and dozens and dozens of schools are participating in these encampments and these protests, all to try to force divestment from Israel and essentially lead to the destruction of the Israeli state and thus all of the Jews that are the predominant population there. So the reality is this hatred is growing, it is expanding, and it is on the verge of becoming something that might be reminiscent of 2020. And I'm not talking about COVID. I'm talking about the other big problem we had in 2020. That's something that our first guest this morning, has been writing about. He is Jack Windsor. He is the founder and editor-in-chief of The Ohio Press Network. He's also a host on Salem Columbus. Jack Windsor, good morning. How are you, bud?
Hey, Bob. I'm super fantastic. Thanks for choosing me to be with you today.
So it's getting beyond crazy. We all know that there are professional paid agitators that are in a lot of these crowds and in a lot of these fomenting a lot of the hatred and the discord on these campuses. But most of them are students, and these are students who probably didn't leave their homes radicalized, but they got radicalized when they got to campus. That's something that Steve Scalise said.
I think most people in America are disgusted by what they're seeing on these campuses. And it started by the way they brew their own hatred. A lot of these professors are teaching the hatred in the classroom. They don't make their Jewish students feel safe. I mean, we saw it. We had hearings on Capitol Hill where we brought Jewish students in who said they flat out are being targeted, harassed in the school, in the classroom. And the schools aren't protecting them. A lot of these Ivy League schools that charge $60,000, $80,000, $100,000 a year. You know, you wonder why some of these students get tagged with all the student loan debt.
So they don't protect them. They don't protect these Jewish students. And that makes this much, much bigger than just a free speech issue, Jack. Because now we're talking about threats of violence and intimidation tactics that can only lead to a worsening situation. What's your take?
Well, my take is I had eggs and bacon for breakfast, you know, and it's Friday. And I hate to be like that, but Bob, you and I have known about this for months. We talked about it last year. And, you know, I'm not trying to be glib, but the reality is the people who are activists for BLM, they go all the way back to even before Ferguson, Missouri, if you remember the riots out there. These people are cross-pollinated. So you do have paid agitators who are showing up at different parts of the country right now, and they're really the foundation of this. And we'll look back at some time later this year, early next year, and we'll trace the money back to the George Soros's, the Hans-Jörg Wisses, the Arabella advisors, you know, the Democratic dark money groups that have platforms on Act Blue to raise money and bail people out. Bob, it's BLM of 2020. It's rebranded to what I call PLM, Palestinian Lives Matter of 2024. And, you know, I want people to remember, certainly there are students who are caught up in this, but this is by design. This is how Democrats rally their young voter base. They foment this type of anger and aggression through the radical progressive professors they have in, on campuses and through other means. So, of course, there are going to be what Xi Van Fleet in her book Mao's America would call the useful idiot. These are the kids who probably for the first time in their life have a chance to do something we all want, Bob. We all want to be part of something bigger than us. We all want to be part of something significant. And this gives them that. And when the campus is inviting for that type of thing, of course there are going to be people who are, you know, what you would call the grassroots people, but you can't lose sight of the fact that millions and millions and millions and millions of dollars has been poured into this, and this will hit some crescendo. My hope is that we don't see, and I think what they're hoping for is something tragic like that happened at Kent State University way back in the day. So we got to stay away from that type of garbage. But you and I both know, Bob, that once this election is over, all of a sudden the social justice warriors will go away. The banners will get folded up until 4 years from now. That's how I view it on a global scale.
Yeah, well, I think it's a good analogy to the BLM protests of 2020, and I think it does kind of have a lot of the same origin, if you will, and that is radicals intent upon creating chaos, you know, whether it be on campuses or in inner cities, and counting on being able to pull along easily led sheep who don't know even what's going on. How many white liberals were all part of the BLM rallies? You know, how many of them joined Antifa not having any real idea of what the BLM was all about, not having any real idea of what it is that they're setting fires for, what they're smashing and whom they're attacking and what it is all about? They don't know they don't know the causes. They don't know the agenda. They don't know they didn't know that BLM was a Marxist organization that had nothing to do with actually concerning themselves with black lives, but they went along because it was the popular thing to do and nobody wanted to be left behind. Same thing here. Ask any one of those students, Jack, and I think you and I talked about this on your program. Ask any one of those students at Columbia, at Yale, at New York University, at Ohio State. This, of course, has now reached here. We knew it was only a matter of time. Yesterday, over a dozen students got arrested in this six-hour anti-Israel protest in Columbus. But ask any of them what river they're talking about when they chant from the river to the sea, Palestine will be free. 99.9% of them have no idea. Ask any one of them to find Israel on a map. Ask them to find Gaza. Ask them what sea they're talking about. They don't know, Jack, but they're easily led into the chaos because that is what chaos requires. It requires, they're almost like extras on a movie set. We need as many of these bodies as we can get, and so they coerce them into coming out there and joining it. Carry this flag, wear this tablecloth-looking thing around your head, which, by the way, those tablecloth-looking scarves and whatever the hell they're actually called that the pro-Palestinians wear, it's the 2024 version of a swastika, and everybody
right.
wearing one is flexing. That is who they are. They are Nazis, and they are trying to kill Jews. And Jack, none of these young idiot kids know what the hell they're protesting.
No, they really don't. And so I will have Lieutenant Governor John Husted with me a little later this morning. We're going to pre-record for my show. He's the first to come out and essentially say thank you to the state police for keeping things, you know, in check at Ohio State. Mike DeWine has been silent, which I think is alarming, which I think is discouraging, which I think shows the void of bold leadership. I mean, you've got Abbott in Texas, who's been right on the money. You have DeSantis in Florida, who last year said, look, the Students for Palestinian Justice, you're not going to be here. It's illegal. We're not going to do it. But Mike DeWine has been silent. So I look forward to talking to John Husted. And a couple of things I want to make sure that we tease out. Isn't it interesting? Rashida Tlaib was, you remember, there was a censure that was passed in 2023 for using the phrase from the river to the sea. And so some of these folks will say, well, the students have a constitutional right. okay, let's have a robust debate about that, because some of the people backing that, Bob, are like, you know, House Minority Leader in Ohio, Allison Russo, who certainly didn't want people who were out rallying for their objection to government overreach during COVID. She didn't want that, but she wants this. And so we have to really be aware that from the river to the sea, the Anti-Defamation League calls that anti-Semitic, as they should. So is that okay? Because you can't go into a theater, a crowded theater, and yell fire. That, to me, is a really good parallel. But here's what we have to remember. If BLM hadn't happened and we didn't know that between $1 and $2 billion of damage was done, hundreds of police officers were assaulted, murders were the result of some of these mostly peaceful protests that happened to burn down buildings and deface government property, you have to be proactive in this environment. So it's going to be interesting to see how state officials and officials around the country handle this. I think you have to be proactive, because I don't think anyone has a right to spew the kind of hate. And by the way, Bob, going back to 2020, if you and I said, and we did, and we got criticized for it, that government overreach was akin to, say, what was going on in Germany by using the public health system to control people, the press got their panties in a bunch, and they wanted to criminalize us for using these anti-Semitic statements. But now they're just content, you know, like a fat boy with cake, right? They're okay with everything going on. And so there's that double standard we're going to have to be aware of and fight throughout this going into November.
Yeah, well, you're exactly right. We're talking to Jack Windsor. He is the editor-in-chief and the founder of the Ohio Press Network. We're talking about the campus craziness. Jack sees a lot of comparisons from BLM in 2020 to PLM now, Palestinian Lives Matter, and this is what they are doing. Jack, last thing on this. Jihad Omar says history will – sorry, that's what I call Ilhan Omar. Jihad Omar says history will be on the side of these protesters. History will judge them as being right, because they're the ones who are opposing a genocide. They're the ones who are trying to stop the Israeli genocide of Palestinians. Now, you know, and I know, that no such genocide is taking place. The only genocide, an actual affirmed call for genocide, an affirmed call for the erasure of Jews from and Israel from the earth, is what the quote-unquote Palestinians are doing. But she says history is going to judge them. How do you think history, both short-term, in other words, 10 years from now, how will 2024 be judged with respect to this, and then long-term as well?
Man, that's a great question. And I think it depends on who controls our world. You know, we've been slouching toward Gomorrah, if you know that's the old analogy, right? We've been doing that for a while. And if the Marxists and globalists take over and you know, tell the tale like they did in the Soviet Union or in China, then you know, then history will say, well, that was the right move. I hope that is not our fate. And I think sound minds will prevail. I had the honor of having Dr. Glenn Dewar on yesterday again. We spent two segments unpacking the history of what's gone on with Palestinians in Israel and their border. And it's really disappointing that news outlets don't spend more time having that type of long-form discussion or even long-form stories to really unpack for Americans what's going on, what the facts are. But I still have a little bit of sliver of hope in humanity. I think history will look back and go, man, because Bob, we don't want to be that group. You and I were probably on the same page here. Remember in history class at some point when it hit you and you went, how the hell did people allow this to go on and happen to the Jews? So I think we're on the right side of history here.
Yeah, I hope so. And, you know, your answer at the beginning there, Jack, I think is spot on. It depends on, you know, what our culture looks like at the time. It depends on who's writing the history books. I mean, in all seriousness, you know, if the left, they're rewriting and distorting actual American history right now from, you know, from the last century. I can only imagine what they're going to do to, you know, to us into this moment in time in future history. Jack Windsor is our guest from the Ohio Press Network. Jack, let's move on a little bit and talk about Title IX. This is another thing that is going to have historical implications. Biden is signing the Title IX reform that was granted by Congress. It is unbelievable to me, or he plans to sign it anyway. It is unbelievable to me that a Democrat party, which is the driving force behind DEI, which is the E of which is equity, and of course most of us call it DIE, but equity for women was brought to bear and brought to light by Title IX. Title IX granted equal opportunity. That's what it's supposed to be. Not equal outcome, but equal opportunity. Title IX brought that, and the same people who championed it are now wiping it out. They are wiping it out, and this, of course, is the progressive left by allowing males, if they have a psychological delusion, a psychological disorder, a condition mentally that makes them think they're women, that they're allowed to go in and take away women's spaces, women's privacy, women's competitive sport, and yes, women's scholarship opportunities. Jack, how can all women not be just rallying against this and telling them, if you do this, you will lose all of our votes on the Democrat side?
Yeah, I think your level of anger is contingent upon how long you've been swallowing the blue poison pill of progressivism, right? There are people who will twist their minds into a pretzel to try to justify this fact. Men can compete with women. I mean, that's it. That's what they're saying. The reality is women and girls can kiss Title IX goodbye. If this is what is going to happen, the Biden administration, they've usurped congressional authority. And in doing so, Bob, they have a lot of constitutional challenges. They're undermining free speech. You cannot compel someone to participate in somebody else's fantasy and go along with it. That person has a right to pretend to be something, but you can't compel me to go along with it. And they're dissolving due process, right? Like, there should be a process or a procedure by which you are punished if you don't go along with something, and they're saying, no, we're going to redefine that for you. And they've taken it upon themselves to redefine what sex is. Sex and gender are not the same thing, and Title IX explicitly said that you could have separate things, accommodations, rules based on sex, right? And so the way that they want it is completely gone. Here's the hope that I have, and maybe it's foolish. There was the West Virginia versus EPA case. And the Supreme Court said essentially, and this is a really, it's oversimplifying, but they said essentially, if there is a broad movement, if it has significant economic impact, the administrative state can't do it. Congress has to do it. And if I were somebody trying to go to bat against Biden in this grotesque Title IX bastardization, I would be finding ways to show that this is sweeping reform, that it has significant economic impact. And then I would take it to the courts and make sure that this is overruled, because it's disgusting. As the father of two school-aged girls, good luck. Good luck. My girl's in jiu-jitsu. She can probably defend herself, but if she fails, you're toast in my book. If that makes sense.
What do you make of the fact that some 400 NCAA athletes sent a letter to the NCAA saying they believe, and I don't know if they're all females, if they're males, or probably both, I guess, but sent a letter to the NAACP, that they want males to be able to participate. And according to the story that I read yesterday, and I don't know if I still have it in front of me here this morning or not. I can look for it real quick. Now I can't see it. Some 100 other advocacy groups, and I don't know if they're just all LGBT groups or whatever, but 100 other advocacy groups also signed on or sent separate letters to the NCAA saying, let the male, this goes back to the Dawn Staley comment before the national championship game, the female coach of the Lady Gamecocks of South Carolina, who said that, after some hemming and hawing and pausing and so forth, said, yeah, if they think they're girls, they ought to be able to play. What do you think of the fact that NCAA athletes, at least a number of them, are supportive of this crap?
Follow the money. Follow the pressure. You know, I say all the time that every major institution in our country has been captured to some level. And I think this is the manifestation of that. You know, if you heard Riley Gaines talk, and I know that you have, you hear her talk about how there are a lot of females, a lot of people who really don't go along, but they're afraid to speak up. They're afraid to speak out. And, you know, I think it has a lot to do with if you do speak up and you do speak out and the woke mob turns against you, what does that mean for your career? What does that mean for your NIL income? What does it mean for your reputation? I mean, you know, these students, being an athlete, doing adult things is hard enough. And then when you have to go against a machine that is full on crazy, Bob, we are like literally we have lost our ability to think. It's XX or XY chromosome. It's very binary. But now we live in this world where somehow we're playing make believe. And I think that's maddening. And I think sometimes people get overwhelmed and go, well, look, if they can't see that this is like a slam dunk layup, easy thing to decide men should not be in women's sports. Why would I, you know, why would I come out against that? And, you know, it's sometimes it's coercion. Sometimes it's I don't want to lose my money or my reputation. But I think that's why it's important to continue to have the conversation and to never back up. Never, ever. Look, these are not trans athletes. These are men pretending to be women. And they have either gender dysphoria or they have what I would call social contagion invoked gender confusion and don't belong in women's sports or changing rooms. They just don't. And you cannot back down. You have to get louder. You have to get more forceful and really take on the tack of the progressive left and just say we refuse to give an inch here.
I like the way you worded that, by the way. Either gender dysphoria or social contagion provoked social confusion. Because gender dysphoria is an actual diagnosis, and a very, 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 very tiny percentage of the population has that actual psychological disorder. These other kids are peer pressured into becoming confused. Peer pressured and pressured also by adults, not just their peers, but by their adults, oftentimes in schools, and certainly most of the time from their screens. And that's the sad reality of it all. Jack Windsor, keep up the phenomenal work at the Ohio Press Network and on Salem Columbus. We appreciate you joining us. Have a great weekend, bud.
You too, brother. Thanks so much.
That's Jack Windsor. We'll take a timeout now. It's 9:55. We've got a couple of other interviews. We're going to be or actually one other interview, I should say. But I want to get into your phone calls, and I want an answer about Top 9 at 9. We took I didn't say I was going to take phone calls on it, but I'm going to because it's a free-for-all Friday. I've already gotten text messages from people who have said keep Top 9 at 9. Everybody I have talked to said keep the Top 9 at 9. They like the role. But we got some phone calls off the air, I'm told, that said go back to the other format and just do your monologue. So I used to do just pretty much a 20-minute monologue to start the show. Now I'm doing Top 9 at 9 with the top stories that I think are the most important for us to discuss. So I want to know what you like better. So when we get to the call segment of the show, and again, I've got one more interview, and then we're going to do that. Tell me whether or not you like it. Tell me whether you want to hear my rant, you know, a France rants style monologue to start the show, or if you want the Top 9 at 9 the way we've been rolling. And I'm going to tell you, I'll be 100% honest, the Top 9 at 9 is a lot of work. I have a lot because I like to pull audio clips with at least a few of the top nine. Can't do them all, of course, but I like to pull the audio clips too, and it takes a lot of time to prep those, and I like it, which is why I'm doing it, but it's work that I don't want to do if it is not the first choice of you, the listener. So if you'd rather hear me rant, I can do that a lot easier than I can pulling all of this audio and playing and writing all this copy for the top nine and nine. So I would like to know what you think. We'll make it a joint effort here. We're all a team. We're all a team. You, me, Marianne, Sausage Boy, we're all together. 216-901-0945. Always right radio on AM 1420.
You and I have a rendezvous with destiny. We'll preserve for our children this, the last best hope of man on earth, or we'll sentence them to take the last step into 1,000 years of darkness.
This is Always Right Radio on AM 1420. The Answer. Here's your host, Bob France.
All right, hour number two is underway now at 7 minutes past 10 o'clock on this free-for-all Friday. Also a fist bump Friday, 26th morning, fourth month, year of our Lord, 2024. So I told you it was one of the top 9 and 9 topics. ADC Alexandria Damasio Cortez is complaining about the fact that police have been mobilized on the campus of Columbia University to try to protect Jewish students. How dare they try to protect these Jews, essentially, is what she said. She didn't say it that way, but she said these are peaceful protests, and they are being mobilized to come out here and attack and to assault the peaceful protesters. She was responded to, of course, by one of the New York police representatives who said, you know, what they are doing is against the rules of the school, and maybe, just maybe, you ought to be supportive of teaching kids the results of breaking the rules. There is a responsibility to follow the rules. Also, the fact that they're threatening to kill Jewish students might give you reason for pause. Well, that's not an overstatement. The self-professed leader of the Columbia University protests on the campuses there, which has spread to campuses all over this country, is a student by the name of Kimani James, and this student goes by they, or they, them, and he, she, and all kinds of different pronouns. I don't know exactly what this person says that they want to be. She, he does describe him, herself as queer and black, and that's fine. I don't give a rip what color you are. What I do give a rip about is this.
Society as a collective, that people, that person, some persons need to die if they have an ideology that results in the death of thousands, hundreds of thousands, millions. If there are people like that who exist, shouldn't they die? Zionists, they're Nazis. They're Nazis. They're fascists. They're supporters of genocide. Why would we want people who are supporters of genocide to live?
Now, I'll stop with the obvious here, or I'll be brief on it. It's literally in the Hamas charter to commit genocide, to wipe out Jews, kill them wherever they are, wherever you see them. If they stand behind you, kill them. If they're behind a rock, kill them. The Hamas leaders, sitting in the comfort of Qatar, have declared that there will be an October 8th and an October 9th and an October 10th and an October 1000th. They will continue to do this until Israel is wiped off of the map. And every Israeli Jew is run from the river to the sea and into the sea. By that very statement, it is Hamas that are the genocidal maniacs. By that very statement, or those statements, this is Hamas that are committing these acts that this queer thing is calling the Zionists. So I'm just looking for some sort of context here. I'm looking for some sort of consistency, anything that I can try to get my hands on to understand what this means. They're calling for the Jews who are the victims of a stated, chartered campaign of extermination of Jews. This person is calling the Jews the Nazis, calling the Jews the oppressors, calling the Jews the fascists, and that they are the ones that should die. I'm trying, but I can't make sense of it. Let's see if our next guest can. Our next guest is Kenneth Abramowitz. He's an author. The Multi-Front War, Defending America from Political Islam, China, Russia, Pandemics, and Racial Strife. Also the founder of SaveTheWest.com, a website dedicated to saving Western civilization from itself. And I'll tell you what, it seems like right now we need exactly that. Kenneth, thank you for the time this morning. How are you?
I'm very well. Thank you very much.
It's a pleasure to have you. We'll talk about the bigger picture about Western civilization in a moment, but can you speak to what I was just discussing in the introduction here, which is these college campuses being guided by a principle of we are the ones who are opposing genocide, and in the course of opposing genocide, we are calling for genocide?
Well, it's an old trick, old communist trick of flipping reality. And so when you do something bad, you accuse your opponent of doing what you're doing and make them look bad. It's called projection. So, yes, Hamas is a genocidal force. I would call them a death cult. And they promised to kill all the Jews. In October 7th, when they illegally invaded Israel, they would have killed 10 million people. By the way, 20% of which are Muslims. It didn't matter. They're a death cult. They will just kill everybody. And so the irony of that speaker is if you want to eliminate genocide, he actually has to eliminate Hamas. That's the irony of the situation. He just reversed reality.
Yeah, that is exactly the point. This is the frustrating part is it's very, very plain to see. You just explained it in 2 seconds and I explained it in 2 minutes. And yet there are thousands of students protesting on campuses all over the country who don't get that, who don't understand that, the complete reality flip that you just described. They think that this is classical Marxism. Everybody knows it. We have all learned so much about Marxism since the advent of Black Lives Matter, particularly in 2020. But this is classical Marxism deciding that there is an oppressed class and there is an oppressor class. And somehow, some way, the Jews are the oppressors and the quote-unquote Palestinians are the oppressed. And therefore, here come these, you know, easily led sheep from their radical universities in support of the oppressed.
Yes, when I look at the protesters, I divide them into two groups, the 10% and the 90%. Mm-hmm. 90% I call what Lenin used to call 100 years ago useful idiots. They're being manipulated. The 10% are the evil, and those 10% need to be identified and removed from campus and arrested if they're they should be arrested for two reasons. One, if they physically assault somebody, and number two, I think they should be arrested for inciting genocide, for inciting violence. That's not yet a crime in America because there's some protections of freedom of speech.
Yeah, I think that's well said. We're talking with Kenneth Abramowitz. He's an author of The Multifront War, Defending America from Political Islam, which I think is part of this right now, China, Russia, Pandemics, and Racial Strife. What do you make, Kenneth, about the President of the United States as it pertains to the 90% and the 10%? Is he part of the 10% when he is given the one out? He has spoken very, very little. His entire country is under siege right now on college campuses with these encampments and these autonomous zones and these blockades and everything that is going on. And he is completely silent on it, save for one statement that he made when he was asked, do you condemn the anti-Semitic protests on college campuses? He said, yes, I condemn the anti-Semitic protests. That's why I've set up a program to deal with that. He has no statement whatsoever of what program he's talking about, but he said he did that. But then he followed it up with, I also condemn those who don't understand what's going on with the Palestinians and how they're being, and then he trailed off because he doesn't know what to say. But he will not condemn with any degree of authority or certainty the anti-Semitic protests.
Yes, I consider the Biden administration to be systemically anti-Semitic. Now, to be fair, they're also systemically anti-Christian. Now, in America, 2% of the people are Jewish and 90% are Christian. So I would say he's systemically, as I said, anti-Semitic and anti-Christian, and this is outrageous.
Is he evil? Kenneth, I'm sorry, is he evil or is he just oblivious? Because I don't understand how you can make a statement like that. He ultimately, I think some people have compared it to, the very fine people on both sides hoax where they tried to accuse Trump of supporting neo-Nazis with such a statement. He literally did say, yeah, I'm against the anti-Semitism, but I'm also against the those who don't understand the plight of the Palestinians. He literally would just sat on a fence and got a splinter in his rear.
Yes, I would have to accuse him of being part of the 10%. Because of his actions, for example, in a perfect world, which we don't live in, President Biden, or any president, by the way, would make an announcement, I will not tolerate anti-Semitism and anti-Christian behavior in a Judeo-Christian country, starting in 1 minute. And if I see any of this behavior on any campus, they're going to lose their tax-exempt status starting in 1 minute. So you have 1 minute, Mr. Administrator, Mrs. Administrator, to figure it out, and I'm not tolerating this at all. That would be the end. That would send a shiver through the universities and get them to act as adults.
You know what's interesting about that? That is very, very similar to something that one leader did say. Let me see if I can find this quickly enough to play it for you. Yeah, I think I can. Now, this leader is only leading one state as opposed to the entire country, but I think this is what you're talking about.
At Columbia, at Yale, all these places, those folks rule the roost. They do whatever they want. And these administrators and the presidents of these universities are weak, they're scared, and they don't do anything. You know, you do that in Florida at our universities, we're showing you the door. You're going to be expelled. When you're doing that stuff. And you know what? The minute people start to face consequences, you are not going to see this nonsense going on.
That's Governor DeSantis. Yesterday, he made that statement about what is going on in Florida. That's exactly what you mean. There has to be consequences to bring this under control, right?
That's exactly right. What he said was 100% right. I'm very proud of him saying that. What I would like to see, again, in a perfect world, which we're not in, I would like to see 50 governors say the same thing. And I don't know how many cities there are in America, but, 5,000 cities, mayors, whatever the number of mayors there are in America, they should say the same thing. And, of course, the president should say the same thing. And, by the way, we did this 50, 60 years ago in the 60s relative to the issue of racism. and we eliminated racism in this country because everybody, top to bottom, said we're not tolerating racism. Well, now it's time for them to say we're not tolerating anti-Semitic and anti-Christian behavior either. We're equating that with racism, and we don't tolerate it. Zero tolerance in this society. That's what would happen in a perfect world.
Yeah, and you know, the most frustrating thing about it is the order that you just gave those in should be flipped. You know, and I agree with you about the mayors and the governors should all do this too, and then so should the president. It should start with the president. If Joe Biden went and did a, you know, a national address or a national press conference or something, you know, even from the Oval Office, and just said, look, this is not acceptable to all colleges and universities. Get your campuses under control, as you just pointed out, or else you will lose tax-exempt status. You will not get tax dollars from any of us again, and so forth. If he issued a firm, unequivocal statement here, watch and see how many of those other leaders at the state and municipal levels would follow suit, and watch how quickly the university presidents and boards of trustees would follow suit if they knew that their cash spigot was going to be turned off.
That's right. This whole mess can be, as I say, can be solved in a minute, at most 5 minutes. And by his not doing that, I have to come to the conclusion that he's systemically anti-Semitic, systemically anti-Christian, because he's not doing what's so obviously must be done.
Kenneth, let's talk a little bit about the organization that you founded, SaveTheWest.com website, which is dedicated to saving Western civilization from itself. Our civilization is in a very, very dire state right now. Can you tell me more?
Yes. I'm a business analyst in the healthcare field, and on 9/11, when we all went through the trauma, I said to myself, I have to start studying what's going on in society. I can't just focus on my job. I'm a citizen of society. And I started roughly a 25-year quest to teach myself national security and understand why we were attacked on 9/11, who did it, why did they do it, and who was helping them. And I, in that quest, I created a book about 5 years ago called The Multi-Front War. I realized that we're in a multi-front war. I call it World War III. And we're under attack by three groups of bad guys, color-coded. The Reds, which is traditional color for communists. The Greens, traditional color for Islam, but particularly Islamists, which is what we're talking about today. And the Blues, traditional color for the United Nations and other global organizations. And I realized that the Reds, the Greens, and the Blues have declared war on Western civilization, Judeo-Christian civilization, the most successful civilization in the history of civilizations in the history of the world. And that's, and I wanted to characterize that, and that's why I wrote the book on the multi-front war.
Yeah, and, you know, it's troubling to see it this way and to say it this way, but we are under direct attack from all three of those colors right now. I mean, if you look at, and we're inviting a lot of it to, you know, into the United States because we have declared as a country by way of our president and in his administration, you know, our southern border to be open. Pretty much anybody who wants to come into this country can do so. All they have to do is scream asylum and here I am. And guess what? The Greens are coming here. Many, you know, a multifold increase over previous years and previous decades from Middle Eastern countries. The Reds are coming here largely from China, and we're talking about 6,002% increase just in the last 3 years alone since Biden opened the door in January of 2022. In the Blues, we are surrendering to globalists. I mean, look, we surrendered virtually all of our medical freedoms to the globalists when we decided to listen to them as far as our response to the COVID pandemic. And I know that's part of your title of the book, you know, Defending America from Political Islam, China, Russia, Pandemics, and Racial Strife. But we listen to, you know, the World Health Organization and other things. We are surrendering American sovereignty to the globalists. All of those are kind of, you know, they're all pointed at us right now. And in fact, they're in our backyards.
Yes. The Reds, the Greens, and the Blues have penetrated the federal government. So when many times when the federal government does something, I say, wait a minute, that's not in the interests of America. That's in the interest of, oh, it's the Reds, depending on the issue. Oh, it's the Reds. Oh, no, it's the Greens. No, it's the Blues. So every time the administration does something that is deleterious to American national security, I imagine fingerprints so to speak, of the bad guys influencing the policy of the Biden administration. And that's why we do things that are directly not in our self-interest. By the way, I also monitor seven forms of warfare for people who might scratching their heads thinking about World War III. It's not just a kinetic war. World War I and World War II were kinetic war. In other words, things blow up. In World War III, as I define it, I monitor kinetic war, obviously, chemical and biological, which is another form of warfare, cultural, which is words, that's what we're talking about today, economic, legal, demographic, the border, and cyber. So when you put together the seven forms of warfare, then it's a little easier to see World War III, because people might say, World War III, you know, I don't see bombs blowing up all over the place, because they're only looking at one form of warfare. I look at seven.
Yeah, well, that's important, and that is so very, very true. Which is the most dangerous to us right now? And you know, I'm thinking cyber because of, you know, cyber attacks and the cyber war. I worry greatly about what they were able to do if they truly do take over our financial systems by way of cyber, you know, insecurity that we have here. We know the Chinese are involved in this. Obviously, TikTok is a big topic right now because there's a talk of banning TikTok because of what the Chinese government is able to collect from Americans. Which would you say is the most direct threat to us now of the seven types of warfare?
Okay, well, I have a little 30-second joke about this. Okay. Pretend that you're a juggler. I don't know how to juggle balls, but pretend that you do. And there's seven balls, each numbered, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7. And I say, Mr. Juggler, excuse me, which of these seven balls is most important? And you say to me, excuse me, I'm a juggler. You know, they're all important. Okay, so the point of my book is that there's no silver bullet to World War III. In other words, if you take one of the seven forms of warfare and pretend you can solve it, you have the other six. So the key message of my book was that we have to solve all seven forms of warfare from all of our three groups of enemies. If you multiply three groups of enemies times seven, it's 21 challenges that we have to meet simultaneously. And now you understand how complicated it is. Because can you do 21 things at the same time?
No. And you know, that makes it sound like it's futile. It's a futile effort, you know, to do 21 things. Do they all have to be done simultaneously? I know in a juggling, you know, thing you do, but, you know, so we can't prioritize 1 through 21 then.
Yeah, yes. So now I have a baseball analogy. Okay,
right.
Pretend you're the best baseball pitcher in the history of pitchers. I put you on the mound, but without eight guys behind you. And I go, play ball. Okay, you're going to lose every single game by definition. Pretend that the ball can go into 21 different directions. It's more than that, but just pretend 21.
Sure.
As soon as I put eight guys on the field, now you have a fighting chance of catching those balls, the 21, pretend, different directions. So the point I'm getting to is it's a team sport. It's not golf. It's a team sport. And you have to have a president with a team behind him. By the way, also a governor with a team behind them. The mayor with a team behind them, and collectively with the team, either on the city level, the state level, or the federal level, then you can play baseball and win against those 21 challenges.
Well, that's a great analogy, except for the fact that now it is futile because we don't have a team. We are not all trying to do the same thing and accomplish the same thing. We're divided. Our team is, you know, I mean, we have people in the field who are deliberately, the ball's being hit at them. We can catch one of the 21 and they're stepping out of the way to let it land. And that's the reality of it when you leave the border open, for example. That's the reality of it when you capitulate to globalist interests. That's the reality when you allow, you know, an invasion of a foreign country, a red army, if you will, of thousands upon thousands of illegal immigrants from China coming here and saying asylum and being allowed to stay. You know, we don't have a team. We don't have eight fielders behind our pitcher, behind me, who are here to help. That's the problem here. We do not have a united effort, do we?
Well, or to make it worse, what if some of your eight players behind you were getting paid by the Reds, the Greens, or the Blues?
Yeah.
Now try winning a game.
Exactly right. That's well said. The book looks phenomenal, and I don't care that it's 5 years old. It's all accurate right now. The Multi-Front War, Defending America from Political Islam, China, Russia, Pandemics, and Racial Strife. Also, check out Ken's website, SaveTheWest.com, as we try to save Western civilization from ourselves. Kenneth Abramowitz, thank you for the time. We appreciate it.
It's a pleasure to be with you.
Good to talk to you. It's 10:28, time out now. The rest of the show is yours, a true free-for-all Friday now. So what do you want to say? How do you want to say it? What do you want to ask? Let's do this. 216-901-0945. I'm always right.
And the answer.
Okay, it is 10:35. Good Friday morning to you. Free-for-all time on AM 1420, the answer. Appreciate you being with us. I posted something this morning. A little bit earlier on my Facebook page. I didn't put it on Twitter, but if you follow me on either one of those places, I really need to get into True Social more. I can't handle more than two social media accounts is the problem. And these two have the biggest followings, so that's the reason I do those. But anyway, I posted the story of Ohio State. You knew it was only a matter of time. The stuff that started on the East Coast with Yale and with Columbia, New York University, and all the other elitist, East Coast universities. And then, of course, the West, which is far worse than the East in terms of its lunacy. But you knew it was going to come across the heartland in short order, and sure it did. 6-hour protest yesterday, at least 12 people arrested in Columbus at Ohio State's ridiculous anti-Israel and thus anti-American protest. Let me just read part of it for you. More than a dozen people arrested as Columbus became the latest site of student-led protest against Israel. Hundreds of Ohio State University students, faculty, and members of the Ohio Arab community rallied to set up tents outside the student union just before 11 p.m. Last night, protesters were starting to leave after nearly 6 hours of chants, prayers, and construction of tents. Police lined College Road South and 12th Avenue as protest organizers encouraged people to go home. An hour before, dozens of police, including State Highway Patrol troopers, surrounded what at one point had been hundreds of protesters trying to break up the demonstration. Columbus Dispatch reporters at the scene witnessed police arresting more than a dozen people. Arrest totals were not available as of early this morning, but a university spokesman said those arrested were charged with criminal trespassing. The spokesperson was not aware of any injuries. Let's see what else. People of Columbus, look at how your cops treat people, said Skylar Goody, a 21-year-old Ohio State junior. I don't know what the students were doing that warranted riot gear and pushing people over while they're praying. I'm sure they didn't push people over while they were praying, you little indoctrinated student, you. Pretty sure that they're there in riot gear because you people in these types of protest scenarios tend to become violent. In fact, it is almost a guarantee if they are not there in riot gear, putting a very, very strong presence in front of your eyes, you will become violent. You know it. I know it. And everybody who's ever watched a bunch of idiot college students rallying for something that they have no earthly idea about, this is what you do. It's the same thing that was done in the BLM riots of 2020. And the only thing that can prevent violence from breaking out is a strong show of force saying, if you try it, look at us, here we are. That's why they're there. It's the right thing to do. Demonstrators stepped up chanting. Officers informed the crowd to disperse in 15 minutes around 7:30 p.m. Another warning 10 minutes after that didn't happen. After 11 o'clock p.m., they were still there. Ohio Revised Code Section 9.76, this was pointed out by university spokesman Ben Johnson, saying state law prohibits Ohio State from divesting in Israel, Ohio, which is one of their demands. Ohio Revised Code Section 9.76 prohibits university from divesting any interest in Israel and prohibits adopting and adhering to a policy that requires divestment from Israel or with persons or entities associated with it. Demonstrators across the nation are protesting the civilian toll in Gaza, where more than 34,000 people have died since the Israeli invasion that followed the Hamas-led attack that killed almost 1,200. I love how they do this. First of all, you are taking those numbers directly from the Hamas health ministry, which this is the country that is trying to get Israel, or excuse me, this is the terror group that is trying to get the country of Israel destroyed. what better way to do that than to turn the anger of the rest of the world against Israel by lying about death tolls? And the American press just posts these things like, oh, it's gospel. After all, if Hamas says it, it must be true. Never mind the fact that Hamas is the one that started this war on October 7th. Students oppose U.S. military aid to Israel and want their schools to stop investing endowment money in companies with Israel links. Well, good for you. Here's my response. We want to stop investing our tax dollars in your endowments. The hell with your money. Ohio State, you get not one more nickel of tax dollars until you get your radical students under control. I say that to Ohio State the same as I will say it to Columbia, the same as I will say it to Penn, to USC, to Berkeley, to Northwestern, and to the rest of them. None of you get a nickel of tax dollars, federal or state, until you get your campuses under control, where your students feel safe from persecution. Until any Jewish student can feel safe walking around campus wearing a yarmulke, walking around campus wearing a Star of David around their neck as a charm, walking around campus knowing that they're not going to be attacked, knowing they're not going to be harassed, intimidated, or blockaded because they're Jewish. Until you do that, not a nickel. I'll be honest with you, I don't understand why any of these universities that have tens of billions of dollars in endowments need any tax money anyway. Why should we be paying them? They have massive endowments from their donors. Their prices for their their tuition costs have skyrocketed at like 600% the rate of everything else with respect to inflation over the last 20, 30 years. I mean, seriously. Schools that were $4,000 in the 1980s per year are $40,000 now. I mean, are you kidding? Schools that were $10,000, $11,000, $12,000, $13,000 a year, which is where I went to school at Heidelberg College, now Heidelberg University, you know, they're $45,000, $50,000, $55,000 a year. The rate of inflation of college tuitions goes right into the pockets of the universities. Why do they, and then their endowments from their donors and their alums, why do they need our tax money anyway? I don't understand it. I don't understand a bit of it. 216-901-0945, 888-281-1110. Phil is calling us from Philly, and I love that. Phil, welcome to the show.
The city of brotherly thugs.
Yes, Bob, you are.
Thanks for taking the call. Yeah. Laura Trump, number one, is doing a fantastic job with the 100,000 of poll watchers and the 80 lawsuits, but she's missing one final last cog in the wheel. And if you look back at what Stalin said, I don't care how many people vote, I only care who counts the votes. If the RNC, and I'm telling everybody who can listen to me, Democrat, Republican, Independents, you know you're voting for Donald Trump, mail in your ballot as soon as you can, because the email that you will get from the state verifying receipt and who you voted for, we need the RNC to establish an email that we can punt that over to. That way the RNC will have their own count, because I guarantee, Bob, they're going to cheat like crazy. When they see things coming in for Trump out, look at what happened here in Philly. Donald Trump was ahead 600,000 votes when we went to sleep. When we woke up, he was down 100,000. It was insane, and they're going to cheat like heck. If we have something where we can send our verification email to the RNC, then we have something we can stomp our feet with. What do you think?
Well, I think you're right. They're going to cheat every step of the way. Look at what the polling says. The latest polling shows Trump ahead in all of the battleground states. Sadly, though, in Philadelphia, only by 2. He's plus 2 in... I'm sorry, in Pennsylvania, not Philadelphia. He's plus 2 in Pennsylvania, but he's plus 4, plus 7, plus 7, plus 8, plus 10 in the other battleground states. And you're doggone well. They're going to look at those numbers and say it's time to enact. You know, they got 6 months to prep it. It's time to enact whatever sort of apparatus they're going to use to cheat this time, because they simply will not accept defeat.
Right. Bob, we're outnumbered 5-1 here, Dems to Republicans in Philly. Not one of my Democratic friends, you have to have Democratic friends, I mean, they're not voting for Biden. The only thing they're afraid of is that they've already voted for Biden. They said, we're going to vote for Trump, but, you know, we don't even know if our vote's going to count. This is how bad it is here. And, you know, we got like 10 ballot houses now where you can go in, get your ballot, filled out that day, and they say, we're safer than the post office. We'll hold your ballot until the election day. We don't have crack houses here in Philly. We've got ballot houses.
They seem like one and the same to me. They're both about as trustworthy.
Love you in Philly, Bob.
Thank you, Phil. Appreciate the call. Great points all the way around. Yeah, I'm worried about that. I'm worried about it, and whatever steps can be taken to minimize the chances of that theft from happening again, we should do, and I will support every one of them. And any ideas, any outside-the-box thoughts, and any work being done by the RNC now that it's under new leadership, certainly I completely support. Thank you, Phil. Let's go to Oats Lisa in Medina. Lisa Woods. Good morning, Lisa.
Hey, good morning, and happy Fist Bump Friday.
Right back at you.
Yep, yep. Hey, we had Claire Lopez on Wednesday at the Ohio Freedom Fighters in York Township in Medina, and wow, did she give a very good talk on mostly what's going on, you know, with in the Mideast, but also with the borders too. And I'll have to tell you that it kind of makes you physically ill.
They're linked. What's going on in the Middle East is linked to the border. Make no mistake about it. There are again, as I told the last guest, exponentially higher numbers of people trying to get into the United States by way of our southern border from the Middle East than we have had in previous decades. You know, because again, there is a full-on open-door policy now by the Biden administration across our southern border. Everybody knows it. We just passed a $95 billion supplemental support bill that, you know, where money goes to every border in the world except for our own, and they know this is the time to come while Biden is still here. If Trump wins, that border gets shut down, and so they're coming from the Middle East, they're coming from China, they're coming from all over the place. So yeah, I'm sure Claire drew that direct distinction, or I'm sorry, that correlation rather, between the strife and the turmoil in the Middle East and what's going on at our border.
Yeah, and it's really good to hear from someone who's directly watching it, who knows the languages, can read, you know, articles from other places. She knows so many different languages, like eight or nine languages, and most of them are Middle East languages. So when you hear something from her and then you hear a few days later in the news, because she's kind of getting it first, so it's really helpful. And that's the same thing with Peter. And so we have Peter coming to McFan this Saturday.
Yeah, Peter told me that on Tuesday after he got off the air. He forgot to mention it to everybody and asked me to promote it, which I did and which I will do again. And I said, you know, I texted him back and I said, Pete, no worries. Lisa's going to call. Either Thursday or Friday, Lisa's going to call. Believe me, everybody will know that you are at McFan this Saturday.
And again, I want to remind the listeners, if they haven't been to McFan in person, please come Saturday. There's nothing like being there with fellow folks and getting energized, and Peter is amazing in person. It's a lot funner to watch him up on stage. It's just a great time, and you're with the cream of the crop. A lot of the leaders, people that are actively working, fighting this war, we're all there, and we like to go out afterwards, and anyone's invited to join us, but we go to across the street to On Tap and continue the conversation, and just so much good stuff is going on. Whatever you're interested in, whether it's, you know, right to life or like Braver Angels, those different types of ways to get involved, the leaders of those groups are here and they're ready to talk to you. And often people from NEOCA, you know, will be there. So please come out in person. You'll be glad you did. And drag a neighbor, someone that hasn't been involved. This is the perfect place to get someone new to get involved, because everyone's reaching some level of frustration. Even if they're not watching politics, they have to go to the pump, right, and pump their gas and get frustrated at the prices. So, you know, if you can come, start to understand why these terrible things are happening and how we as citizens can get more involved and do something. So,
yep.
And it's not just McFan. You know, it's like the Ohio Freedom Fighters. It's our local Republican county parties. Medina's doing an incredible job. Now Lorraine, we've got new leadership in Lorraine. We'll see what happens there. I'm really excited about the opportunities there are for people to get involved so that we can have a better outcome in November and everything going forward.
Amen to that. Amen to that. That's a great sales pitch right there. So if that doesn't drag you to Thirsty Cowboy tomorrow and drag a friend with you, then I don't know what it's going to take, because that was a very, very strong strong pitch. Lisa, have a great time tomorrow with Peter Kersenow. I know everybody who has ever heard him speak is coming back because they love him. If you have never heard Peter speak, he's so great in answering questions, too. He really, really likes to interact. By all means, be there tomorrow morning at the Thirsty Cowboy at 9 o'clock.
Thank you.
Lisa, thank you. I appreciate your call, always. All right, that's Lisa Woods from McFan. Let's go to Berea now. Sally is on AM 1420, The Answer. Good morning, Sally.
Hi. Hi, Bob. We appreciate the extra work that you've taken in summarizing the important headlines, because it would be impossible, even with a six-hour program, to cover all the craziness that has come up lately every single day. So we like having the summary, and then you can just cover whatever you're able to cover. But thank you for doing that. And also, we feel abandoned by our governor once again. The fact that he hasn't come out with any strong statements like DeSantis or in Texas. So once again, he let us down, but we'll keep speaking up. Wow. And I'll call in another time about the early voting. I have some information on that.
Okay.
So thanks for everything.
Well, hey, Sally, before you go, I want to say thank you to you. You know what I got in my mailbox a couple of days ago? I got a beautiful card from Sally and her husband in Berea. It was such a nice thing. It was in response to the Patrick Henry Liberty Award that I got from OVV. It was so kind of you and your husband to think of me, and thank you so much for that sweet gesture.
Well, it was well deserved.
Well,
thank you for all you do.
Certainly appreciate it. Thank you so much, Sally. As to the point that Sally just made, listen, the top nine at nine, the reason I did it is because of what she just said. Because she said it would take 6 hours to cover all of the things I want to cover, and she's right. Just inside baseball, the way I do this radio show for years and years and years and years now, I mean, I put a topic list together for every show. And, you know, people sometimes ask me, how long does it take you to prepare a 3-hour radio show? And the answer is all the time. Literally, that's how much time it takes, is all of it, because I'm always working. Whether I'm doing something fun or not, if I see or hear something that is important that's in the news that is local or statewide or national, I'm writing it down or I'm jotting it down or I'm doing a voice dictation to myself or something because I need to, you know, research it more and bring it to the airwaves. And I have a ton of stuff. And every day I have this big long list, and then I'll get on a rant and I'll talk about one topic or two topics for an extended period of time, and all the other stuff never gets its time on the air. That's why I decided to start the show. All right. So I don't miss these important stories that you need to be aware of, these important developments, these important statements, these important sound bites, et cetera, that you need to be aware of to really, truly understand, you know, the challenge before us and all of those different things. I figured I'll put it in the top of the show, list you the top nine things that I've got, and then we can work our way through which ones are most important as the show goes on. That way they don't get short shrift at the end or they don't get brought up at all, which is the way things sometimes happen. That's the reason for the little survey. And I forgot I even brought up that survey, so thank you, Sally. I want to know, because some people have already called and said they want me to keep the top 9 and 9 for the reasons I just described, and other people have called and said go back to the monologue. They like the extended, in-depth look at a thing or two things in the monologue style that I was starting the show with. So, yeah, I like to be a man of the people. I like to be providing what you want to hear. So if you want Monologue Bob, I'll do Monologue Bob. If you like Top 9 at 9 and then the pieces and parts of those stories as the show goes on after that, we can do it that way. Tell me which one you prefer, because I'm fine either way. I just want to make sure I get as much I make as much people, I don't want to say happy, that's the wrong word, that I'm satisfying what the listeners desire as humanly possible. Jim, in West Park, what do you desire, good sir?
Yes, I like the 9 in the morning.
Okay.
I like your 9. And now there was a report this morning that Hezbollah fired a rocket into Israel and killed 2 Israelis. Can you confirm that?
I did see a report of that. It didn't jump out as far as the deaths, excuse me, because this is a sad reality, and not a lot of people know, Jim. They're firing rockets into Israel all of the time. They're literally doing this all of the time. So if there was one that killed somebody or two Israelis this morning, I did not see that. But I do know that Hezbollah and Hamas and Palestinian Islamic Jihad are continuing to fire rockets almost indiscriminately. Most of them are being blown up or stopped by the Iron Dome. The defense system that they have, of course, is extraordinarily capable, and so they're not landing. So if there was one that killed 2 people, I did not see that. I cannot confirm that.
Okay. I'm kind of happy that the rabble-rousers have turned on to the Democrats, the flakes, and now they're getting a taste of what happened on January 6th with the mega people. I kind of like that. I'm not a person, these people might not get jobs when they graduate if they get caught up in this, and that's kind of nice.
That's an interesting analogy there to compare that, Jim. I like that, and I'm kind of with you to the extent. And thank you for the call, my friend. To the extent that the left cannot understand why the right was so motivated on January 6th to do what was supposed to happen, what started out as a peaceful and patriotic making your voices heard, that devolved into something because of federal agitators who were in the crowd and because the Capitol Police started attacking certain individuals in that crowd that forced a lot of pushback and devolved into a riot. But they seem to think that that was A-OK, talking about the left, to come down as hard on the J6 protesters as they did. But now, I didn't think of this until Jim, now that the police are coming down on and rounding up some of the protesters, the intimidators, the harassers, and so forth on the campuses as they push their anti-Semitic agenda forward, suddenly they're like, oh my gosh, how dare you? Leave us alone to protest. Really, really good analogy. I'm glad you brought it up. And by the way, as evidence of what I said, just I looked it up super quick, Hezbollah launched dozens of rockets at Israel after civilian deaths. This is dated 3 days ago, so they like I said, they're doing it all the time, but it's just they're not making news because most of them are incinerated, if you will, and plucked out of the air by the Iron Dome defense system. But Hezbollah fighters fired dozens of Katyusha rockets at northern Israel as part of a response to the Israel enemy attacks on what they say are attacks in Lebanon on civilian homes, etc. So this is a nonstop campaign of aggression against Israel. But to the one about this morning and whether or not it killed two people, I do not have any evidence of that. 8 hours ago, one person died. Okay, so there's some confirmation that I do not have, or I did not have, but Sausage Boy gave us that. So we'll look it up and give you any more details on that after the top of the hour. We've got a news break coming. We got more time for phone calls. 216-901-0945. Truly a free-for-all Friday. What do you want to talk about? What questions, comments do you have? Let's do it on AM 14.
564-5000.
This hour of Always Right Radio is brought to you by The Floor King and KeepingMedicareSimple.com.
You and I know and do not believe that life is so dear and peace so sweet as to be purchased at the price of chains and slavery. If nothing in life is worth dying for, when did this begin? Just in the face of this enemy? Or should Moses have told the children of Israel to live in slavery under the Pharaohs? Should Christ have refused the cross? Should the patriots at Concord Bridge have thrown down their guns and refused to fire the shot heard round the world? The martyrs of history were not fools. And our honored dead, who gave their lives to stop the advance of the Nazis, didn't die in vain. Where then is the road to peace? Well, it's a simple answer after all. You and I have the courage to say to our enemies, there is a price we will not pay. There is a point beyond which they must not advance.
This is Always Right Radio with Bob France on AM 1420, The Answer.
It is indeed. Good morning. Thank you for being with us. 9 minutes past 11 o'clock. Hour number three is underway, and we certainly appreciate you being a part of it. 216-901-0945, 888-281-1110. It's a free-for-all Friday, this 26th morning of the fourth month in the year of our Lord, 2024. A lot of variety, a wide variety of topics to get into today. I'm going to start this hour, though, before I go to those calls, with a story that I did not get to this week that I want to get to because it's important. This is a story about Barberton. This was a post on Facebook on the 18th, actually. So this is, 8 days now, from the Barberton City School District. Since we're talking about schools, this is more than about just schools. It's also about communities. But here's the post. For immediate release, International Welcome Center to launch refugee resettlement program in partnership with Barberton City Schools, further cementing the district's rich history of diversity and inclusion. That's what it says. It also says Barberton City Schools will not gain anything financially from this partnership, and we have open seats throughout the district each year that this will help to fill. We are all magics. And then it has a link to a letter, and it's a very long letter. I don't want to read all of it, but I want to read part of it so you can understand what's going on here. The International Welcome Center, in partnership with World Relief, is proud to announce the launch of a refugee resettlement program aimed at offering a new home and hope to individuals and families in need. This initiative, in partnership with the City of Barberton, Barberton Schools, County of Summit, Executive Home, Executive, it's hard to read, it's very small print, I'm sorry to say, Executive, County of Summit Executive Henny Shapiro's Department of Job and Family Services, and many others, underscoring Barberton's commitment to diversity, inclusivity, and helping those in need. The Refugee Resettlement Program in Barberton is designed to provide a safe and supportive environment for those fleeing conflict, persecution, and hardship. In other words, illegal aliens from their home countries. Through collaboration with various community organizations, local businesses, and volunteers, the program aims to facilitate the successful integration of refugees into the fabric of the Magic City. Mayor William Judge expressed his enthusiasm for the Refugee Resettlement Initiative, stating, "Barberton has a long history of welcoming new residents with open arms. We are thrilled to extend our hospitality to refugees, illegal aliens, seeking a better life and opportunities for a better future by embracing diversity and promoting cultural exchange. We enrich the long history of strong and ethnic neighborhoods in Barberton." The International Welcome Center's executive director, Christina Hodgkinson, expressed her excitement for the city of Barberton and points to its long history of welcoming immigrants. It's more and more of that. In my 30 years plus of education, I've worked with the refugees. I've always been impressed with how hard they work to learn our language and customs. That's not what I'm observing, by the way, nationwide. And excel in schools and communities. We're excited to welcome and support more refugees as we open our new communities, said World Relief Senior Vice President of U.S. Programs, somebody. In the midst of an unprecedented global displacement crisis, we're eager for more in more spaces to help refugees to rebuild their lives in the United States. And on and on and on it goes with that garbage. The International Welcome Center. Okay. So let's try to unpack that a little bit. The response from many in the community in Barberton was what it should be, including, what the hell is this? Our kids are already under-resourced in the schools. You say that there are seats in the school that are available that can be filled, but there aren't. Even if there are, there is no resources for all of these kids. What is this going to do to the rest of us? Some of the feedback on the Barberton School District website from parents, wow, guess they didn't appreciate the feedback from the community. That was in response to the fact that the Barberton City School District deleted the feedback posts, which led to more feedback posts. Exactly. The feedback was almost entirely against it. I bet if we was all for it, they wouldn't have deleted it. That speaks volumes. Either agree with us or be silenced. Judy, they care more about illegals than our own kids. I think that's a fair thing to say, by the way. Let's see. There's more. Why was the original post deleted? What happened to freedom of speech? Because the sheep didn't applaud it, so it was silenced. If everyone was cheering it, all the comments would still be there. It died when the left took over. I never thought it would hit our town. What a shame. It is more than a shame. Again, it is very, very destructive because a lot of these people are talking about the conditions in Barberton schools in which they have no space whatsoever. And the fact that they're going to bring in a bunch of non-English speakers and try to assimilate them into Barberton's regular classrooms means you're going to have teachers up there trying to speak to kids who don't understand them, perhaps, perhaps multiple languages, not just half of the class speaking English, half of the class speaking Spanish, but maybe half of them speak Arabic, or maybe half, maybe some of them speak Arabic, maybe some of them speak, you know, Portuguese, which is different than Spanish, and on and on and on and down the line it goes. And what happens to the American kids who are sitting there trying to learn? They can't, because every 2 seconds, everything has to be repeated, if they can even find an interpreter, to the people in the other side of the room. I mean, this is very, very serious. If there was a refugee resettlement program being partnered with an organization like this International Welcome Center, whose goal is absolutely not in the best interest of the United States and and our communities and our students, but just finding places to put the millions of illegals that Biden is allowing into this country, I would be rebelling. And the people of Barberton apparently are. The people of Barberton are rebelling, and they are being silenced by Barberton schools. They won't even allow them to express their opinions on their web pages. One person updated this story on Wednesday, saying the superintendent has responded with quite a lengthy response after all of the concerning comments. The school has been under scrutiny regarding this, and nothing has been done or dealt with. And now, boy, the people are fired up, and with reason. If I can, okay, now they're talking about going to the school board meeting and so forth. I'm looking for the superintendent's response. I don't know that I can find it. They just had another school board meeting on Wednesday. Okay, so that's why they were talking about Wednesday night. But I'm curious. People are asking, what's the fine line between illegal immigrant and refugee? Most illegals are also fleeing hardships, war-torn countries, and thus alike. Listen, they're all illegals. They just come here and are saying, I'm a refugee. I'm seeking asylum from persecution in my country. It doesn't matter what country. It doesn't matter what persecution. All they have to do is say it. And the Biden policy is accept it. Accept their claim of persecution. Accept their claim of refugee status. And then tell them we'll get into it in an immigration and asylum court. And when will that happen? 7 years. What do they do in the meantime? Grab a spot in the local schools. There you go. We got your backs. We'll take care of all of you. Doesn't matter. If you've got a response to that, I would very much like to hear it. Like I said, I got this story a little bit earlier in the week, never got around to it because of all of the craziness going on campuses, but I would like to know what you think, especially if you are a Barberton resident. 216-901-0945 and 888-281-1110. TJ is waiting and is now up on AM 1420, The Answer. Hi, TJ, go ahead.
Yeah, hi, Bob. You know, with this sausage boy, it made me think of an old movie. I don't know if you've seen it, Cabin Boy.
You know,
where he became a cab. It was a comedy. He was this cabin boy, and one day he got up and he goes, I am now a cabin man. But that made me think of Seth. So I did a little poll, a little micro poll there in my group. And
well, hold on. Before you tell me about your poll, Seth, Sausage Boy,
yes.
Do you ever go camping in cabins?
I have.
Okay. Do you like them?
No, this cabin boy was on a boat. He was picked
up. Oh, that kind of cabin. Okay.
These fishermen picked him up.
I was just wondering if Sausage Boy was going to pick up Cabin Boy as a side name. Okay.
But at any rate, I did my little poll and Sausage won. So I think that it's time for Seth to stand up and say, I am no longer a sausage boy. I am now a sausage man.
We offered him part-time Sausage King from Abe Froman, the Sausage King of Chicago from Ferris Bueller's Day Off. We'll give him a break once in a while and give him Sausage King, but no Sausage Man. There is no Sausage Man. There is Sausage Boy and Sausage Boy only.
But you know, truthfully, the best pizza I ever had in my life didn't have either sausage or pepperoni on it.
Really?
When I was stationed at Fort Carson in Colorado, they had this restaurant, Giuseppe's.
Yeah,
and their biggest seller was the name
Giuseppe's Pizza. Sounds like it would be amazing.
Well,
just
it wasn't
because
a pizza;
of the name.
It was a restaurant, but their main seller was a deep dish pizza made with ground meat.
Yeah,
and it was delicious. I've never had a pizza that good since, and you know,
I bet that same restaurant though that can make a ground beef pizza will also make a pepperoni pizza, and I bet it's amazing.
probably, you know, the only thing is, you know, being a Polish, you know, garlic is the big thing with us people. And, you know, it's pretty hard to garlic up pepperoni. But garlic sausage on a pizza is fantastic.
I do like garlic. I don't think I've ever, well, you know what, I like the garlic dipping sauce. I like the garlic, you know, Parmesan garlic dipping sauce you dip the crusts in when you're done. That's kind of my favorite thing.
Well, my father would make his own sausage, you know, in kielbasa. And he used a lot of garlic. And I remember my mom, when I was a kid, would make homemade pizza, you know, with the garlic sausage on it. And that was fantastic pizza, better than anything you got in the store or anything.
Well, TJ, appreciate the call. Thanks for giving us the results of your poll. TJ polled himself and Seth and came up with garlic or sausage one. So there you go. Sausage boy lives. Joanne in Twinsburg. Hi, Joanne. Go right ahead.
Good morning. I'm this sausage boy thing. Far be it from me.
We got wars waging on college campuses. Hold on, we got wars waging on college campuses. We got refugee resettlements coming into our neighborhoods, and everybody wants to talk about sausage boy.
All right, I'm just looking for a little bit of levity in this nonsensical world.
That's why we're doing it too. We got.
I hardly think that a man that thinks that chicken and barbecue sauce on a pizza is qualified to weigh in on this.
Barbecue chicken pizza is amazing.
Chicken pizza yourself.
Yeah, barbecue chicken pizza is amazing.
That is the biggest oxymoron for a pizza I've ever heard in my life.
No, you realize that what they do with pizzas now, I mean, seriously, I mean, there are so many things that are not even pizza. There's like cheeseburger pizza. They literally, I know TJ was just talking about ground beef, but no, like ground beef
and
mustard and ketchup and onions and pickles and stuff. Anything you put on a cheeseburger, they're just putting on a pizza crust and saying, it's pizza. You know, I mean, there are a lot of those different things that are there now. But I'll tell you something, my personal opinion about barbecue chicken pizza. If you just put barbecue sauce down along with the cheese and the chicken and so forth, it's not good. There is a blend of pizza sauce with barbecue sauce, that sweet
please.
Barbecue sauce, that makes it like incredibly different. Only a few restaurants have it. The ones that just like pour a bunch of sweet baby Ray's on the crust and say, there, it's barbecue chicken pizza. I don't buy that nonsense. But the
whole
kind
thing sounds awful to me.
But the rest of it is really good.
Of Italian aunts and uncles, we made our own homemade sausage. They made pizza. It was square, not round. You cut it into rectangular pieces, and you rolled the sausage up with the pizza, and you ate it. And that's how I grew up eating pizza.
As far as
Italian people go, I think a sausage wins.
Well, it takes all types, and that's fine. Everybody's taste is different, except that. And thank you, Jan, for the call. Joanne, I mean, I will say this, though, in response, and thank you. The numbers are working against you and Sausage Boy. The numbers are not close. Let me read this text message from Pete that I got. Was it yesterday or was it Wednesday when Sausage Boy, I think Wednesday was when Sausage Boy was born. But I got a message from Pete, who has been working in the pizza industry for 20 years. Quote, having spent 20 years either full-time or part-time in pizza, it's pepperoni by a marathon in terms of the most popular topping. Mushrooms, onions, and sausage are far behind. That's what a pizza professional says. So Joanne can like what she likes. I can like what I like. Seth can like what he likes. That's what makes him Sausage Boy. But the whole start of the conversation was, what's the best topping on pizza? And by a marathon, according to a pizza professional, by a marathon, the answer is pepperoni. That's it. There's no coming back from that. So if you want to be so diehard on your I hate pepperoni and I love sausage, fine, enjoy Sausage Boy. There you go. Navy Man Norm. I bet Norm doesn't want to talk about pizza. Norm, go right ahead.
I'm not going to address that wonderful pizza war, except I have a question for Seth. Are you sure you went to St. Ignatius and not St. Ed's?
Wow. Wow.
Can you dig it?
Oh, my. And I'm going to let the mind wander. Everybody's mind can wander about what exactly that meant. This will fall under the category of if you know, you know. All right, we'll just leave it at that. All right, go ahead, Norm.
I want to give a shout out to all the wonderful parents in the city of Barberton who are standing up for their children, for their state, and for their country, because we've had our fill. We've had our fill of this. I am so sick. I don't want to hear the word Ukraine. I don't want to hear the word alien, invader, illegal. All I want to hear is the word American. That's what I want to hear. And I am so fed up with our representatives, especially my own, Congressman Miller. I don't want to go into any details, but let's suffice it to say, comes November 5th, my wife and I are not voting for Max Miller. We're not voting for...
Are you going to vote for Dennis Kucinich?
No. I don't trust him.
What are you going to do?
We're not going to vote for a congressman, or maybe I'll write in my own name. Maybe I'll write in Navy Man Norm.
So a protest vote for Navy Man Norm. No, listen, I understand. I'm hearing from a lot of people in the 7th who are very, very disenchanted with what Congressman Miller is doing. I've had him on the program many times after some of his more controversial votes, and I've asked him to explain himself. He's done so. Some people are satisfied. Some people are not. After this latest round, I look forward to having him back in and on. I think I'm told, Sausage Boy, isn't he coming into the studio in the next week or so?
Yes, we haven't set on a date yet, but yes, he's going to be coming in studio.
Okay, so yeah, so he's agreed to come in studio. So when he does that, Norm, what I will do is I will ask him all of the requisite questions that I have for him, but I will open up the phone lines if he's willing to answer questions directly from his constituents or people in Northeast Ohio. I will give you the opportunity to do that.
Wonderful. I just want to mention DEI real quick. Diversity, sure. Equity, and inclusivity. I think we should bring back the draft. I think we should bring back the draft and make a requirement. You either serve 2 years in the armed forces or you serve 2 years in a community service project or hospital. And diversity, you wanted it. You got all the diversity you can handle. And equity, oh, everybody's the same. Everybody is the same. And inclusivity, you're all going to be included. So let these candy-ass college students, excuse my French, pay their dues, okay? You know, they want everything free. Everything's got to be, you know, on the backs of the taxpayers. It's time that you paid back. And I think the best thing would be if I was President Trump, who I'm sure is going to be our next president, after I pardoned all the January 6th prisoners, I would go ahead and I would introduce a bill to reinstitute the draft. I mean, give these people what they want. I mean, they want equity. You won't give it to them in the armed forces or in the hospitals. So it's time to pay your dues. And that's all I'm going to say about that.
We'll give them equity in spades. Yeah, I love it. Navy Man Norm, that is a beautiful sentiment, my friend. That's the best description of DEI that I've heard yet. That's exactly how it ought to be. Thank you, Navy Man Norm. We're coming up on the bottom of the hour break, but we got time for more calls. 216-901-0945. Woo!
The Answer.
Okay, 11:36, final segment of the hour, final segment of the show, in fact, final segment of the entire week. Well, for you anyway. For me, I've got three more. I'm going to be on for Brandon Tatum tonight, so I'll be hosting the Officer Tatum Show from 6 to 9 p.m. So if you are feeling it, go ahead and tune in. We'll have a lot of more conversation on some of the things we've talked about today. It'll be great to get the perspective of some people across the country. By the way, vis-a-vis the top 9 at 9 versus the monologue question that I asked earlier, Lisa Woods isn't helping me. She texted me, I like the top 9 at 9, and I love the monologues. Maybe you could open and close the week with the 9 at 9, but then do the monologues on Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday. You're killing me. You're killing me. Just pick one. Pick one, and I got to stick with the format. I can't. I'll mess up the days. I'm ADHD. It's already tough enough for me to keep organized. I can't change the format. I got to stay with one thing and hope that it's the best one. Okay. Tom is in... Independence. Tom, welcome to the show. You're on the air. Go ahead.
Hello, Bob. Fist bump Friday to you.
Right back at you. Thank you.
I want to express a call out to people that could help out for this election. As you know, it's going to be, we want to keep it fair, and we need Republicans and conservatives at the polls. I work the polls, and I could tell you, we need Republicans. I am completely outnumbered at my polling location. I am the only Republican there. And I know there's other sites like that, too. I'm not the only one. But it sure does help to have it balanced a little bit more than what we do. It's like 1-8 at some of these polling locations. And the Republicans are needed to do a lot of the procedures that have to take place throughout the polling times. And it's a really good thing for young people, you know, just out of high school, college kids, even retirees, everybody across the board, 18 and up, we need you. And I say that now, and I'm asking to put the word out, use your voice and your platform, because it does take a little bit of training. You'd have to go through a training class to do it, but it's really needed, and I'd appreciate it.
Well, I'll tell you something. I completely agree with you. You do have my support. You do have my voice behind this, too. Lisa, speaking of the aforementioned Lisa Woods, they just held one of those at a McFan event where they had basically the poll worker training session there. They had people who could sign up right there, and I think they did the training right on the spot. They had one of those there. So it is something that conservative organizations and groups need to do, do more of that, get the word out, because if it's 8-1, as you just said, Tom, that's unacceptable. That is unacceptable because I do not trust. I'm sorry to be so blatant about it, but I do not trust Democrats to do it right and to make sure that we have a free and fair election and that every polling location is monitored correctly and that the results of the results are the real will of the people. So I second your comment, and I hope every organization like McFan, every conservative or Republican group will do something like that, have a drive to get people who can do it, people who do have the ability and the time on election day to make sure that they, you know, that they do staff those things with just as many Republicans as Democrats. So great message, and I'm so glad you brought it up, Tom.
Thanks, Bob. I appreciate it. Have a good weekend.
You got it. Same to you. Appreciate that. Walt in West Park is next. Hi, Walt. You're on the air. Go ahead.
Oh, hi, Bob. I'm in favor of the top 9-9.
Okay. Well, that's good.
But I called in relation to some of the discussions that occurred during the week regarding Ukrainian corruption.
Okay.
Now, Ukraine, as a satellite country of the Soviet Union, was probably the most infiltrated by communists for years. Then, after 1991, Russia did not let go of its influence on Ukraine.
Mm-hmm.
And as a result, the Ukrainians were tormented by the Russians for years after 1991. In fact, the first major election that the Ukrainians had was so corrupted by Russia that the Russians actually poisoned the Ukrainian candidate that was a nationalist in favor of the candidate who was a Russian communist. That election was overturned by the Ukrainian Supreme Court because it was so flagrantly corrupt. After that, the Russians still wouldn't let go of their hold on Ukraine. And consequently, the corruption in Ukraine persisted. Now, in the next decade, Ukraine started to emerge from the corruption, and the Russians didn't give up, and they still haven't given up.
Yeah, well, I want to try to fast forward you to present day. I do appreciate the history lesson, but time, I know, but time is going to restrict us from getting there now at the pace we're going. So tell me about right now with the corruption.
There are indexes of corruption that actually exist. One is the CPI index, and the other is the TI index, and these are worldwide, and all the countries are rated as to the degree of corruption. In the last 10 years, on the CPI index, PCI index, Ukraine has improved by 10 whole points out of 100. Russia, it was rated out of 180 countries as 141. And the higher the number, the more the corruption.
Right.
Ukraine has improved from essentially the same as Russia over the last 10 years to a position of 104, which is a major increase. There's still a lot of corruption. Now, if you try to...
Well, I need to interrupt you here, not out of rudeness, but I'm out of time, and I appreciate your call. Thank you very much. But I just don't have time for the expanded lesson here, except to say that we're not giving $230 billion to Russia, which we know is corrupt. We're not giving $200 billion to any other nation right now. The Ukraine is the number one recipient of American generosity, and it's corrupt. Whether it has improved in its corruption or not is not my point right now. What is it today? It is corrupt. It's being led by a man who canceled his own country's elections because the longer the war stays on, the longer he stays in power. If they actually hold elections, there is a strong chance he will be booted by the Ukrainian people. That's